From the Denker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today on the show, we get a preview of the upcoming 17th annual Utah Humanities Book Festival. Here's festival director Michael McLean.
Costumes and sales and that kind of thing aren't necessarily crucial to the book festival. I mean, we're really there about the authors and about their work and engaging as deeply as possible, allowing the audience to engage as deeply as possible with the authors and their books.
That conversation and your summary of the day's top local headlines coming up on The Rundown here on KCPW. First up, though, this world news from the BBC. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Ross Chambliss, sitting in for Roger McDonough. Coming up, a conversation between Roger McDonough and the Utah Humanities Council's Michael McLean about the Utah Humanities Book Festival, now in its 17th year. But first, a summary of today's top local headlines. Nearly 200 friends and family gathered for a funeral today inside a Mormon church in Saratoga Springs for 22-year-old Darian Hunt, a young black man who was fatally shot by Utah police. Hunt was killed on September 10th in a strip mall in Saratoga Springs. The fatal shooting didn't get much attention until Hunt's mother came out days later and said she believed her son was shot because he was black. Authorities, however, say race played no role in the shooting. They say officers were reacting to Hunt lunging at them with a sword that had a 2.5-foot steel blade. Governor Gary Herbert may have a tough sell getting his fellow Republicans to support his Medicaid expansion plan. Today, Taylorsville Republican Representative Jim Dunnigan said that some of his colleagues will only support a plan that requires people to work in exchange for health coverage. The federal government has offered to cover most of the cost if states expand their Medicaid programs. The governor said Wednesday that he hopes to have a plan by the end of the month that he can present to lawmakers. Advocacy groups are claiming that Stericycle, the facility criticized for its incineration of medical waste near homes in North Salt Lake, also burned radioactive material. The group Communities for Clean Air wants Stericycle to shut down, and they point to a video interview with an anonymous former employee. The person accuses the company of ignoring rules limiting the amount of radioactivity of waste coming into the plant. A spokesman for the company calls the accusations unlikely and says they would violate company procedures. Stericycle is taking steps to move to a remote West Desert location. Still, the Salt Lake Tribune reports state authorities are investigating. And today, a Utah activist says Salt Lake City's two major outdoor advertising companies have refused to carry a billboard that reads, "God Loves Gays." Mark Lawrence of Restoring Our Humanity says representatives from Reagan Outdoor Advertising and Yesco called the subject matter too controversial. The billboard design comes from an internet artist who calls himself God and has been attempting to put up similar signs around the country. Yesco said in a statement it carefully evaluates all advertising requests with, quote, community standards in mind. Dewey Reagan says some of Reagan's contracts with landowners limit what can be posted, and the decision wasn't a comment on the issue. And finally, the Utah State Legislature has been holding interim committee meetings this week. On Wednesday, one committee discussed a federal program known as the 1033 program. 1033 began in the 1990s as a means of providing military surplus equipment to local law enforcement agencies. The intent was to aid those agencies in the war on drugs and later for counterterrorism efforts. But the program has recently come under scrutiny nationwide after accusations of excessive force by police. Wednesday's legislative hearing on the issue was meant to be a review of how the 1033 program works, but the residual issues surrounding the program garnered more attention than procedural matters. KCPW's Ryan Cunningham brings us this audio postcard of yesterday's legislative meeting, beginning with Marina Lowe of the ACLU.
We concluded that it does seem that policing in America has become more militarized for a variety of reasons.
Marina Lowe of ACLU Utah.
I think I mentioned before that there were some concerns around SWAT activities, and our report found that of the SWAT deployments that were reported to us, 62% of them were for drug searches, not for sort of the high-risk scenarios you might think that they would be used for.
Now here's Representative Paul Ray with a question for Lowe.
Would you define what militarization is?
I think it's a much broader concept, and I'll just give you my own personal definition. It may be different for others. Law enforcement's job is to work with the people that they serve, obviously to fight crime, but they're not viewing the people in their community as the enemy, which I think is different and juxtaposed against the way somebody on the battlefield is viewing their enemies. And the concern that we have when we're talking about transferring military weapons and military tactics from the battlefield to local communities is that we're not dealing with the same sort of objectives.
You mentioned Ferguson. The deal in Ferguson, I think, had nothing to do with the militarization of police. The shooting is with a handgun. It was a typical policing incident where you're going to question somebody because of suspicious activities. So, and, I mean, it happened. I'm not saying whether it was justified or not, but right. It had nothing at all to do with this program or militarization of police. Do you realize the majority of people arrested were not citizens of Ferguson? They were from out of state. They came in specifically to protest and cause problems. It wasn't their citizens that they were fighting against. It was anarchists, and it was people that have an agenda that what they do is go around and try to cause problems. Let's make sure that that's out in the public. You know, you keep talking about militarization. Well, these guys have the same goal every day is to go home to their families. And when we restrict what they can do and what they can use, we're risking their lives. And I think we need to, if we're going to protect the public, we need to have the same armament and the same firepower that the guys, that the criminals, the gangbangers on the street's going to have so that we can combat that.
Senator Daniel Thatcher offers his perspective.
I'm sorry, I have never seen an officer treat a citizen of the state of Utah as an enemy. And I completely reject that idea.
This is a national trend. I'm not talking about specific officers. I'm not trying to malign law enforcement in any way. I'm saying that this is something that over the course of a period of time, and particularly thanks to a program instituted by the federal government, that creates incentives for local law enforcement to use these types of equipment that send a message to local communities that they are being viewed as the enemy.
I had a personal experience of an armed bank robber coming on my little dead-end street.
Now Representative Dana Layton.
And it was right after that when it was known that they were sort of underarmed. And my husband happened to be cleaning his M16 in the garage. So he ran it out to the Orem police officer and said, if you can use this here. And the guy's like, yes, thanks, and took it. But
Colonel Daniel Fuhrer of the Utah Patrol. And I can sympathize with Ms. Lowe. I understand that she comes from a perspective where she hasn't had a gunshot round go 2 inches over her head, wearing a ballistic helmet, thinking, thank God I have a helmet, has not jumped off of a helicopter, search for Mr. Curley after he shot and killed Brian Harris, wishing you had an MRAP, has not had a Molotov cocktail blown out your feet as you feel the fire running up your legs, thinking that you have a Nomex suit on. So different perspectives give people different opinions.
That audio postcard of yesterday's legislative interim meeting was produced by Ryan Cunningham. And that's it for today's top local headlines. You're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Ross Chambliss. Now on the show, we turn to a conversation KCPW's Roger McDonough had earlier today with Michael McLean of the Utah Humanities Council. The Utah Humanities Book Festival, now in its 17th year, is now underway, and McLean offered a preview of local events as well as a little of the history and purpose of this annual literary event.
Michael McLean, director of the Utah Humanities Book Festival, thanks very much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so it's the 17th annual Utah Humanities Book Festival. It's already underway. Where is it taking place? When did it kick off, and how long does it run for?
Well, Orem is usually the first community to kind of kick things off for us. The Orem Reads program gets started pretty early in September. They started off with a family poetry night on the 15th, so Monday. The first event in Salt Lake was actually last night with Jean Kane, who I believe you interviewed yesterday.
That's right. We had her on the show. And she was at City Art Reading here at the City Library, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. The festival is interesting. It's always a great opportunity to see your favorite authors or some of your favorite authors face-to-face or up close and personal. I'm wondering if you could tell us some of the featured authors that you've got coming to the festival this year.
Sure. On the keynote day, which is coming up on September 27th, that's a week from Saturday, we've got Diane Ackerman, who is best known for Natural History of the Senses, probably?
Correct, yeah.
She has a new book coming out called The Human Age, The World Shaped by Us, which is, it kind of gets into this idea of the Anthropocene, which is this...
The epoch that we may be living in.
Right.
There's a dispute among geologists,
right.
I guess, yeah.
There's a much more positive slant to her book. I mean, the Anthropocene is kind of being held up as this dire age that we're entering into. But Ackerman's book it approaches it from a slightly different angle and talks a lot more about the positive ways in which we've shaped the world, as well as some of the...
That's great. It's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have some other, I know you have other ones. You've got former U.S. Poet Laureate Robert Pinsky coming at some point.
Yeah, he's going to be part of that Orem Reads programming that I mentioned, which they're focusing entirely on poetry this year, which is thrilling for me. I mean, my background's in poetry, and so there is a lot of poetry going on in this festival, which wasn't my doing. It was all of our partners around the state were interested in having poets this year for, I don't know the reason, but I'm glad to see it.
It's in the air. Who knows? Yep. And then others, Anthony Doerr, tell us about him.
Anthony Doerr is, he's a writer from Montana. I don't know if he's actually from Montana, but he's currently living in Montana. And he has a new book out called All the Light We Cannot See, which gets into the German invasion of France during World War II. Mm. And focuses on, one of the protagonists is a young girl who's gone blind. She's a Parisian that has to flee to St. Malo, which is in the north of France, not too far from Normandy Beach. And the other kind of protagonist in the book is Werner, who is a young German soldier, kind of forced into the Hitler Youth and the German army. And it's an extraordinary book, creating a lot of buzz nationally. Betsy Burton is going to be interviewing him, actually.
Oh, well, from the King's English.
For his West Jordan visit, yes. But he'll also be in Logan, doing a couple of events up there. And this book is one of my favorite books in the last couple of years.
All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr. I know that Chuck Palahniuk is coming as well. When is that? Actually, but first off, maybe once again, tell us when Anthony Doerr is going to be.
He will be up in Logan on September 23rd and 24th. And then he'll be in West Jordan on September 25th. And I should note, some old information made its way into the print program. For any people who saw that, it will not be in the Salt Lake City Public Library Auditorium. It will be at the Viridian Event Center in West Jordan.
In West Jordan, so, okay.
Yes.
Okay, but Chuck Palahniuk, he's a well-known author. There's a big following for Chuck Palahniuk.
Absolutely.
Why is he most famous?
Probably best known for Fight Club, which of course was turned into the, was it David Fincher?
I think it is David Fincher.
Who made the film. But he has a new book coming out. I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody as far as what the book is about, but he'll be up at the Student Union Center at the University of Utah. I can't take credit for this one. This is mostly King's English doing. They managed to land him. It's the first time he's ever been in Utah. It's going to be packed, and it's going to be a fantastic event. That event is actually ticketed. I believe it's $30, but you get a free copy of the book, a free signed copy of the book with the ticket.
Because wrangling all of these authors has got to be, first off, logistically difficult, but to a certain degree expensive as well. Some of them have fees that come with appearances. How is the book festival funded?
A number of different sources. The Utah Humanities Council, which puts on the book festival. We get a lot of our funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities. We also get some state funding. And a good chunk of our funding comes from foundations and private donors and a number of sources. But we also, a big part of the way in which we work is we work with partners. We're not an organization. We don't have our own venue. We don't have an auditorium or a theater or something like that.
Right.
And so we get out into communities and we work with community partners throughout the state, and they contribute hugely to this festival. I mean, this, people see the program and see how large this thing is. That's not me. That's myself with a whole lot of partners. I wish I could give credit to all of them right now, but there's a long, long list of partners around the state that make this possible. So,
I wanted to actually ask you, I think about the opportunities to come face to face with some of these people, Robert Pinsky or Diane Ackerman. How are those authors decided upon? Is it kind of, you're going out, you have a big list and you're saying, we would like to get some of these people, but otherwise you just kind of have to go with who's available in the moment?
Well, this gets back to your question of cost to some degree, because one way that, I operate on a reasonably small budget, and So one way that we make this happen is I keep an eye on what's coming out in the fall, summer and fall, in terms of the publisher's catalogs and things. And we try and line up people who are out on book tours. Yeah. It helps keep costs down. And it also helps us to land bigger name authors because Salt Lake it's not flyover country anymore. It's actually a cultural stop for a lot of these publishers now. And we've been managing to get, I mean, Ackerman is a good example of that.
Well, it's Ski City, USA now. I mean, so... are these events, you mentioned that Chuck Palahniuk is a ticketed event. How about the rest of the festival? Do you pay to get in? And what's your attendance like?
Over the last decade or so, we've averaged about, it's been about 14,000 to 18,000 people statewide attending these events. The vast majority of them are free. There are a few things that are ticketed events.
Sure.
For example, we're bringing Literary Deathmatch back again this year.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that.
And that is a ticketed event. We can get back to that in a minute.
Sure.
But there's others such as some of our partners will do fundraising events for nonprofits and schools and things in their community. They'll do, you know, dinners with authors that are ticketed, things like that. And we're okay with that. But the vast majority of the programming is free and open to the public.
You know, I'm thinking about this from a sort of societal standpoint. You know, we have Comic-Con, and that's this massive event with millions of people coming in, maybe not millions, but, you know, tens of thousands of people
feels
coming
like
in. Yeah, it sure doesn't. It's and, you know, you have many authors showing up there, of course, of specific genres of fiction and beyond. How does this event compare to something that's maybe more, I don't know, popularly recognized? And why is this important? Why is, I mean, it's funny to ask somebody who's directing the festival why it's important, but, you know, it's like, why are books important, Mike?
I think the main difference, sheer numbers is a big difference between Comic-Con and the book festival, but the level of engagement, I think, is different in a lot of cases. I mean, that's not to say that there isn't anything going on at Comic-Con that is beyond just surface level, but costumes and sales and that kind of thing aren't necessarily crucial to the book festival. I mean, we're really there about the authors and about their work and engaging as deeply as possible while allowing the audience to engage as deeply as possible with the authors and their books.
Is there kind of a cult of the author, which is not quite a phrase, because, you know, you could just pick up the book, read it, get a lot from it, and maybe, you know, never meet the author. And, of course, that's obviously the case with a number of authors from times gone by. Is this something that people do because they want to get greater insight into the works of the authors, or are they going because they're in love with that person, kind of?
I think there's a large spectrum there. I definitely think there is. The cult of the author can certainly form. I mean, you take somebody... Palahniuk is a good example of that.
Right.
Somebody like Thomas Pynchon, who never goes out in public. You know, there's certainly that. Sorry, folks, we won't be getting Thomas Pynchon.
Yeah, that would be imagine.
But I think, you know, if you look, Utah's such a hotbed for YA literature right now.
Right, young adult.
And I don't want to refer to those fans as creating a cult. But right. I mean, somebody like Brandon Mull or Brandon Sanderson makes an appearance almost anywhere in the state, and hundreds of people turn out.
Yeah.
You know? And it's, I think that's indicative of the fact that this I used to work for Ken Sanders, and he used to always talk about how the death of the book was much exaggerated. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, people are reading in different ways now, and they're finding it through different avenues, and they're engaging with literature in different ways. But I think readership is up overall.
You know, we've talked about kind of the rock stars that you're bringing in, and I'm thinking that you are also featuring a number of, you know, part of the, it seems like the drive of the book festival is to show people who you might not be as well aware of, you know, lesser-known authors, lesser-known publishers, in fact. I mean, it's obviously probably a little bit more difficult to get to draw an audience to smaller-name authors who you haven't heard of, but you've got local authors, you've got a whole variety there, right?
There's a couple that come immediately to mind. One being, I have a partnership this year with Slow Food Utah, and we are bringing in an author who has a book out from Torrey House Press, which of course is a Utah publisher,
right?
Doing great work, books about the Colorado Plateau. And the author's name is Kay Ann Short. She's written a book called The Bushel's Worth, and it deals with her life in community-supported agriculture, basically. She and her husband run a CSA out in Colorado on the Front Range. And, you know, sure, the themes of her work fit in very well with what Slow Food Utah is doing. And if your listeners haven't heard of Slow Food Utah yet, look them up. They're doing incredible things with a lot of the farms and CSAs and things that are that you see at the farmers markets and with the honey producers in the state and all kinds of different groups.
Right.
And so this they do a monthly book club, and all of the books that they pick deal with the issues that they're concerned with.
Wow.
And so Kay-Ann's book lines up really nicely with that, so we're bringing her in as their book club author for October.
When is she going to be around?
That will be October 22nd, and we will be doing that at the Sorenson Unity Center out on 9th West and 13th South.
Great.
And there's one of my favorite projects going on in the state right now is called the Red Fred Project, which is being run by a graphic designer named Dallas Graham. And what he's done, it's a really complex and amazing thing that I'm not going to be able to do justice to here, but essentially he's created this group of characters called the Jelly Troop, and they're graphic design elements that have been made to kind of look like birds, and they're punctuation marks and other things.
Yeah.
That he's created these kind of comic characters out of. And what he's doing is going around and finding one child in each state in the country who has either a terminal or an extremely rare disease.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes in and uses he works with the child to create their own book and tell their own story. And we've seen a lot the last 6 months or so about how reading creates empathy, how important it is that reading creates empathy. I don't think there's a better example out there right now than what Dallas is doing with this project. The book's ability to create empathy from the children's peers and from their peers' parents is just incredible.
Where is he from?
He's from Salt Lake. He lives here, at least. Yep. Not sure where he's from originally.
And when will he be appearing at the book festival?
We're going to be, that will actually be at the King's English on October 25th. I believe it starts at 6 p.m. And part of that will be Rob Ekman, who many of you might know as the in-house Dr. Seuss at the King's English. He does the Seuss Hour with kids up there.
Right.
He'll be performing one or two of the first few books that they've done with kids around the country.
That they produce.
It should be a really, really fun night.
That's remarkable. Hey, because our time is limited, I'm going to turn to a different topic altogether, which is something we mentioned before, literary deathmatch. What what is this? I know, I'll just let you set it up. What is the literary deathmatch?
Literary deathmatch is the gong show with authors,
right.
Basically. That's the best comparison I can think of. Essentially, it's part literary event, part game show, part cage match, and
it takes place at bars generally here.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. The host is Adrian Todd Zuniga, who's from LA. He's been doing this show around the world now for 5 or 6 years, and basically you have 3 judges, you have 4 contestants, 2 rounds of competition,
right.
And in between there's all kinds of games and quizzes and things done with the audience. And Adrian he was born to be a game show host. He's perfect for it. That'll be at the Urban Lounge on October 16th.
And it involves some of the authors at the book festival, right?
Yes. Yeah. Our judges, I don't have the list in front of me here. Our judges are Angela Lovell,
yep.
Molly Gaudry, and Matthew Ivan Bennett. He's a playwright here in town. And our contestants are Jeff Metcalf, Deanne Emmett.
Mostly local.
Yeah, they're all locals.
Yeah.
It'll be a great night. It'll be a lot of fun.
Well, we look forward to it. Remind us again when that is?
October 16th.
October 16th. Michael McLean, director of the Utah Humanities Book Festival, now in its 17th year. We're unfortunately out of time. There's a lot more information that you could provide us. How can people find out more about the Book Fest?
Our website is www.utahhumanities.org. If you want to go directly to the Book Festival homepage, just that website, /bookfestival.htm. Otherwise, there's posters and programs available all over the city, libraries, coffee shops, bookstores. And the print program, the full print program is also available online, as are detailed event listings of everything we have going on.
All around the state.
Yep, all over the state. Moab, Ogden, Logan, everywhere.
And now through Halloween.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Michael McLean, thanks once again for coming in.
Thank you.
And again, that was KCPW's Roger McDonough speaking with Michael McLean, director of the Utah Humanities Book Festival. For a full version of this program, as well as links to the festival schedule, visit our website, kcpw.org. You can also find a podcast of this program on iTunes. I'm Ross Chambliss, and you're tuned into The Rundown. Stay with us. Thanks once again for tuning into The Rundown this afternoon. Our show was produced by Roger McDonough with additional help from reporter Ryan Cunningham. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Join us every weekday evening at 5 p.m. for The Rundown here on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Stay tuned now for the Utah Business Report and Marketplace.